until they went for the occupancy permit and our building inspector went, whoop, too close to the roadway. Well, they appealed.
That's why you have foundation.
They appealed and said, would that have been a hardship not created by the applicant?
No, it was created by the applicant and the applicant's employees or, you know, or contractors. I mean, the surveyor is responsible for that mistake and hopefully he's got good insurance. Because, I mean, that's, it's not the applicant per se, but I mean, that is, I'm pretty sure that that would be classified as the applicant or his agents.
Okay.
I think
so. We, in that case, we should have not granted a variance, right? I mean, we couldn't.
Probably, yeah. I mean, that's how I would read it.
Well, I think that was brought up in this last case. There were some maps that were inaccurate that were being used and so on and so forth. And not knowing the history, I think that's what the surveyor had basically defended itself on, some inadequate maps that actually came from the town.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but the surveyor is responsible for surveying the property properly.
I'm just telling you what I read. I wasn't part of that case, yeah. But you know, when you go down to it, it was a mistake made. You're responsible, and
whatever map the town presented, I can't imagine it was survey quality. So, however the surveyor got that onto a survey,
yeah,
I'm not sure how they did that. Anyway,
surveyor of the county, anyway.
But so next, when we talk a little bit about this, the appeal stays the enforcement. Appeal of a permit is not. So we talked about the appeal staying enforcement. So if somebody's in violation, like this guy with the fireplace, when he appeals to you guys, he's no longer in violation. When you deny it, he's in violation again. He appeals to Superior Court, he's no longer in violation. Superior Court denies it, he's in violation again. The opposite is true of a permit. The building inspector issues a permit and the neighbor appeals, the permit's not staying. So you can continue building your house. I don't know if I would, because you might get denied, the appeal might get overturned.
We had one of those years ago. Mm-hmm.
Those are messier.
It was a 6-hour marathon meeting with PowerPoint.
That's the right house?
The blue house now. I don't know. Yeah, but he had the red house.
So the appeal must be heard in a reasonable time and notice is required. So, you know, one of the key things with a reasonable time, that's why it's really important to get alternates. Because you advertise for the hearing and there's a certain amount of advertisement time and all that kind of thing. If you continue to not get a quorum, then you're not meeting the applicant's statutory due process requirements for the hearing to be heard in a reasonable time. So it's very important to get those alternates in place so that you can have the hearing when you call for the hearing. If this is new, the official whose decision was appealed must provide the relevant. Now it's new, but it was often done anyway. So that, you know, typically the building inspector or the zoning enforcement officer or somebody like that. Really, I think in your case the building inspector is acting as the zoning enforcement officer. Decision was appealed, must provide the relevant documents to the board and to the appellant and to the owner, if the appellant isn't the owner, and must be present at the hearing. So I think there must have been times where the zoning inspector didn't show up at the hearing, and so, or they didn't present the packet, you know, they presented the packet of information in advance maybe to the board, but not to the appellant, and so the appellant's attorney, you know, showed up blind and had all these arguments that they didn't have the ability to cross-examine, basically. And so they've clarified that all that information has to be presented to the board, to all parties, and that person must be present at the hearing. The applicant is not limited to matters stated in the notice of appeal, which, you know, means basically in the application. So, for instance, if they appeal the zoning administrator's decision because of X, they can show up at the hearing and appeal because of X and Y. That's okay. It basically protects them. If they realize after they file the appeal that there are other issues, for instance, that, you know, there's a procedural problem with your ordinance that they didn't know about and they want to challenge the ordinance itself, something like that, they're allowed to bring that up. And that's basically protecting the private party from government overstep. The board must continue the hearing if any party, including the city, would be prejudiced by evidence not presented. So if there's evidence that would decide a case, you know, if somebody said, but it's, you know, but it is only 18 inches, it's not over by 24 inches, and you don't have, you need more evidence, then you're basically bound to continue that hearing to another time until that evidence can be presented. You don't just make the decision with incomplete information. If there's information that the decision would hinge on, you continue and you wait for that information. Whether, no matter who it would prejudice, the town or the other party. The board may reverse or affirm in whole or in part the appeal decision. And so, you know, you could, if the zoning administrator was completely right or completely wrong, then it's a little bit easier and you could overturn or affirm. But you could, if they were partially wrong or if there were two, you know, appealing on two different cases or there were two different situations or something, then you could do it in part. You could vary it a little bit. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. And this last one is new, and honestly, I don't know what it means or how it could potentially play out, that the parties may agree to mediation or other alternate resolution. That doesn't make sense to me, because the town is enforcing their ordinance, and you can't negotiate away your police power. And so I don't see how mediation could actually work, unless there's enough gray area that the town could have some flexibility without running afoul of its own ordinances. But the town doesn't really have the authority to not follow its own ordinances. And so I don't know how that would play out. That is a new standard that I know of has not been tested.
Maybe in cases where some of the board members have to recuse themselves, so
where there's not enough room for or something, potentially. And there aren't enough, alternates, absolutely. Maybe that's a good point. So quasi-judicial procedures. You guys are pretty familiar with this. The quorum depends on local ordinance. I don't think your ordinance says. I don't remember it saying what a quorum is. It could be 4/5, it could be a simple majority, and it could be different depending on what you're hearing, and we'll get to that in a minute on voting. So it used to be that Board of Adjustment was 4/5 majority to overturn an appeal or to grant a variance, and that has now changed as of October. You still require the 4/5 majority grant of variance, but now it's only a simple majority to issue a conditional use permit or special use permit or to overturn an administrative decision, which basically means to grant the appeal. And so you could write your ordinance to say a variance requires a 4/5 majority quorum because there's no point in conducting a hearing if there aren't enough people there to grant the variance. And you could have a quorum for a conditional use permit, which of course you guys don't do, or an appeal could just be a simple majority since that would be enough to make that action. And they've also clarified in the statute that vacant seats and disqualified members are not considered members for determining the majority where alternates are not available. But again, alternates are very important to be able to avoid that situation in the first place. So if somebody can't make it, somebody's disqualified, there's a vacant seat, you still have a full board. So the hearing itself, it's an evidentiary hearing to gather facts, not public opinion. It's not a public hearing like on a text amendment to the ordinance or something like that, or rezoning. We don't really care what the public thinks, honestly, believe it or not. What matters are the facts and the evidence presented. A detailed record of the hearing is required. Josie's probably familiar with that, including detailed minutes or preferably verbatim transcripts or recordings. Not just simply the board took this action, which might be acceptable. You know, the board discussed it and took this action, which might be acceptable for the council, is not acceptable for the Board of Adjustment. As you guys know, in the appeal to Superior Court, the court didn't rehear the case, did they? They just read the record and they made their decision. So the minutes have to be detailed enough for the judge to be able to make a decision without having to call witnesses, without having to rehear the evidence. So it has to be detailed.
We usually hire a court reporter.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. Typically, places will just record them and burn a CD and keep it with the case file. That would work as well. And then the hearing for each case must be open and closed. you guys probably, in most smaller towns, are a one case day. You don't typically have multiple cases in a day, but there are situations where there would be multiple cases in a day.
We did one time.
And so the hearing has to be opened and closed for each one of those. You can't, you're not holding one big hearing, there's separate cases. So witnesses, by the way, my little stars up here mean that that this has changed a little bit based on the new legislation. So the evidence must, and also by the way, I can make this available to Josie so you guys can have this presentation if you want. Evidence must be presented under oath. Cross-examination must be allowed. The board can subpoena witnesses. So for instance, if it's a fire protection question and the fire marshal didn't show up, you can subpoena him. And you can compel him to show up and ask him whether or not it's a fire protection issue. And the chair or the clerk of the board may administer oaths. It used to be that I think could administer oaths, and they've now broadened it so that the clerk to the board can also administer oaths. Evidence must be substantial, competent, and material. It must be entered into the record and kept on file. Hearsay and non-expert testimony cannot be the basis for a decision or for establishing fact. That's one we'll talk about a little bit more in detail. But, you know, what happens when somebody stands up and they present non-expert testimony? You know, you can't really stop them probably from saying it. You just can't base your decision on it. But I don't like it. It's not evidence, and it's not expert. Or my neighbor says, or my neighbor's a contractor, and he says, or whatever. That's hearsay. Board members, even honestly, a petition from the neighborhood that says we support the variance. They're not there. That's hearsay. It's not available for cross examination. So it prejudices the party, the other party. The board members may not gather evidence outside of the hearing. And ex parte communication is not allowed. This goes back to the constitutional rights, the due process rights of the applicant. If you're discussing this case outside of the hearing, or you're communicating this, or you're gathering other evidence outside of the hearing, you're biasing yourself with information that wasn't presented under oath, subject to cross-examination, and all that. And so you really have to avoid that. And that's why it's especially good that the Board of Adjustment, and it's not always the case, that the Board of Adjustment is a separate board from a planning board or from the city council. Those people are encouraged to do their research, to talk to the neighbors, to talk to the community, to get the feel of the community and find out if this is popular, if this is a good idea. That is absolutely the opposite for the Board of Adjustment. You insulate yourselves completely, you don't read the paper, you don't talk about it, you let the information be presented, you are an impartial decision maker. If you're not an impartial decision maker, then you have to recuse yourself. And so what's the point of doing all the extra homework and having these conversations with people if it's not going to help you, if you're not going to be able to take part in the case anyway? Findings. So written findings of fact are required. They kind of were always required, but now they're required by ordinance or by statute. Where there is conflicting evidence, the board must specify what it determines to be the facts that are the basis for the decision. So that's what I was talking about before. Somebody says it's 18 feet, somebody says it's 24 feet. You have to determine what is in fact the fact, and that fact is the one that you're basing your decision on. Rehearings. The board may not rehear a case a second time unless there is a significant change in site conditions or the ordinance. Honestly, I think your applicant got around that by submitting two different requests. But if they had both been appeals or both been variances, you wouldn't have even been allowed to hear it the second time. Unless there was been significant changes. And it doesn't sound like in that situation there was a significant change. And appeals are made to the Superior Court, and those also must be filed within 30 days. So precedent. Prior decisions are not legally binding. So just because you granted a variance to this guy over here doesn't mean you have to grant a variance to that guy over there. Because every case is decided on its own individual merits. And if the situation is not the same, then you don't have to come to the same conclusion. That being said, similar situations should generally be treated alike if they are in fact similar, and unless there are facts justifying finding otherwise. So just because you're not setting precedent doesn't mean that you should be all over the place. It just means that if the facts in case A meant that you go this way, and the facts in case B, which is the same 15-inch setback variance on the front yard or whatever, if case A has a unique site condition and case B doesn't, then you find differently for those two cases. Conflict of interest. So the Constitution of the state gives parties of quasi-judicial decisions the right to an impartial decision maker. So you have got to avoid conflict of interest. And if you don't, then basically you're just giving that party a valid reason to appeal and a judge a valid reason to overturn your decision. Again, don't waste your time by taking part in a case if you've got a conflict of interest. And having a predetermined bias or a predetermined opinion on how a case should come out is a conflict of interest. Open meetings. All meetings and all deliberations must be open to the public, but the deliberations and the decisions may be separate from the hearing. They still have to be open, but you can convene the hearing and come back and make your decision at a different time. I recommend against it because you may have further questions. Honestly, you don't have to close the hearing until you're ready to vote, or you probably could close the hearing after you vote, honestly. Because you could have your motion, you could have your second, you could say any questions, and if somebody's like, you know what, just if you could clarify this one thing, if the hearing's closed, no more evidence can be presented. So you really want to hold closing that hearing until the very end so that any last question can be answered. And then finally, liability. Zoning Board of Adjustment members are public officers and you have limited liability. So if this guy doesn't like your decision, instead of appealing to the Superior Court, he just wants to take you guys individually to court, you're protected from that. Judge can throw that one out. So conflicts of interest. You're disqualified from participating, not just from voting, from participating. That means if you have a conflict of interest and you need to recuse yourself, you're not a member of the board at that point. You leave the table. You don't sit up there as if you're a member of the board and just not make a vote or just not ask the question. For all intents and purposes, you're not a member of the board. You recuse yourself. You can sit in the audience. You can go home. But you don't participate. And these are conflicts of interest. If you have a fixed opinion prior to the hearing, if you have undisclosed ex parte communication, which is very likely to help influence your fixed opinion prior to the hearing, if you have a close family business or other relationship with an affected person, or if you have a financial interest in the outcome. If you don't recuse yourself and an objection is raised, and you refuse to recuse yourself, then the rest of the board, your peers, will vote on whether or not to recuse you. And again, it's to protect the integrity of the process and to not open the process up to legal claims and to have it overturned by the court. And so it's in everybody's best interest to avoid the conflict of interest and to recuse if there is a conflict of interest and not let it get to the point where your peers are going to have to vote you off.
Does that happen at the time the hearing is being heard? Or?
Yes, generally. You can, if you were quoted in the paper saying I'm opposed to this, and there's clearly have a fixed opinion prior to the hearing, I mean, you can recuse yourself in advance, and you can tell, Josie, for instance, that that you can't attend, or that you've got a conflict of interest, and that the alternate needs to fill your spot, or it can happen at the hearing, but it doesn't. You wouldn't have to recuse yourself. I mean, I suppose you could just not show up. You just can't participate if you have a conflict
right.
of interest.
I was just curious as to, is it more often than not that it happens right at the hearing that someone challenges it?
Oh, the challenge would be at the hearing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The challenge would have to be at the hearing because the rest of the board would have to vote on it.
Right.
So it would have to be in open session and it would have to be at a public meeting. That was subject to open meetings laws and all of that. So this often I find these next couple slides are very helpful to people. So the written findings of facts that are required. So here are some examples of what they're talking about for a written finding of fact. Section 12-5A of the zoning ordinance requires a 15-foot side yard setback in the R10 zoning district when the structure was required. That's a fact. You can fact check that, and you can write that in your findings of fact. That the applicant constructed an accessory structure in the summer of 2013 without a permit and in violation of the side yard setback required at the time of construction. You can fact check that. There's there's no permit on hand. You can go back and look at the aerial photos or what have you and figure out when they built the accessory structure. The zoning enforcement officer visited the site on such and such a date and identified the following violations. That's a fact. I mean, I guess it could be contentious, and so maybe it's not a fact, and in that case, it would be a finding of fact. But I think it still would be. If you find that is a fact, even if there's an alternate information evidence presented, then you're stating it as a fact, and that would be one of the basis for your decision.
Only if you wrote it and they were documented. If it was just verbal.
If he says it under oath at the hearing, then it could be fact.
Yeah.
The proposed development project is expected to generate XYZ traffic, according to some published official guide. That could be a finding of fact. And then, based on those facts, and the facts should lay out your case, A, B, C, D, and E are important items that were presented during the case that have a bearing on my decision. Those are your facts. Your conclusions or law are the next step. And then, therefore, the applicant's hardship is self-imposed because he or she knew or should have known that the permit was required prior to construction, or that the hardship is not the result of site characteristics but is common to all the commercial property in the neighborhood. Those are your conclusions by which you will deny or approve the variance or appeal. That the zoning administrator denied the permit appropriately because the proposed building should be classified as a primary structure, not an accessory structure, as proposed or argued by the applicant. So some considerations for findings of fact and conclusions of law. They must be in writing. That's very clear in the new statutes. They must be signed by the chair or some other authorized member, if obviously the chair is not there, the person acting as chair. They must explain the logic behind the decision. That's why you would have the findings of fact that say, here's what we found, and the conclusion of law. Here's what we decided because of those facts. So, some things to consider. Who will prepare them? Sometimes they're prepared in advance by staff. It's very difficult to do, but oftentimes the applicant has submitted their exhibit A, B, C, and D prior to the hearing. The staff has prepared their exhibits A, B, C, and D prior to the hearing. They put that packet together. Some of those facts can be established, and as the Board of Adjustment, you can say, well, this might be in the draft findings of fact, but it's not a fact. We've decided that that's not the case. But it helps to have something in writing as a basis to go by. That the applicant, submitted applications on this date, probably not a contested fact, or maybe there's a copy of the application with the applicant's signature on it. So you put that as that could be a finding of fact that's done in advance. That the building inspector approved the construction plans on such and such a date. That the zoning administrator approved or denied this on such and such a date. That the zoning official visited the site, did an inspection on such and such a date. That the appeal was filed on such and such a date. Typically, those are not things that are all that contentious. There will be some things that you guys will want to monkey with. But should staff prepare it beforehand? I tend to think that they should, but I think the challenge in that is that the board has to just recognize that it's just a starting point that helps you get to where you're going more quickly so that you're not trying to draft that at the end of the hearing while you're going through the case. But it could be that the staff prepares it. It could be that the board prepares it during the hearing. It could be that the board's attorney prepares it. I mean, there are a variety of ways that it could work. But it typically helps if there's something done in advance. But when will they be prepared? Obviously, if they're done in advance, they were done without the benefit of the hearing. And so there's a good bit of assumption that's going on. And so probably it's going to be some combination. They're prepared in advance, but they're modified on site, or they're prepared after the fact, and the board reconvenes to approve the findings of fact and the conclusions of law. And then finally, again, when are they approved? They approved at that meeting? Do you reconvene at another time? Are they approved with the minutes? Following meeting. For a board like you that meets very infrequently, I would say you should approve it at the end of the meeting. Or if you've got a lot of changes to the draft findings, then you set a hearing when you close the hearing and you make your finding before you adjourn the meeting, you set a meeting for next month to reconvene, or next week or whatever, to reconvene and to approve the changes that you requested staff to prepare for the findings?
Typically in the past, and I'm only saying because I was the chairman for 8 years, or almost 8 years, when we had a hearing, we did all the finding of facts, we did voting on everything, so forth, so on. All that was done, of course, at the hearing. Everything was voted on at the hearing. Josie wasn't in charge of it then, but what happened was they would call me up within the next, once staff took all that, put it all together to send out to the applicant, I would come in maybe a couple days later and review it, sign it, and it was done. Is that not?
As long, I think the challenge is that probably all the board members need to review that to ensure that they all agree that those are in fact the facts that we decided on at the meeting. Now, I guess if there's a recording or there's a court reporter and there's word-to-word transcript, then probably that's fine. So I think a lot of it will just sort of depend on the process. That's a good case for why there should be some rules of procedure for the Board of Adjustment. You can put that down in writing and agree that this is how we're going to do things. If we're going to be going to have a court reporter, then they can just type those out verbatim, and they can tell us what our conditions, what our findings of fact are. As long as you've sort of, as long as that's all in the record, and if you walked through the findings of fact and the conclusions of law, and that can be easily reproduced from the discussion, then that should totally be sufficient. But oftentimes, if they're prepared in advance and they're going to be modified, then people want to put their eyes back on them before they approve it. But that would also be acceptable. So testimony, evidence, consideration. How should non-expert testimony be handled? Typically, you let somebody say their piece because you probably don't know. They may start off with some non-expert testimony about, I don't like it, and it shouldn't be this way, and blah, blah, blah. What's that?
We get a bunch of that.
I'm sure you do. But maybe they actually eventually get to something of substance. And as a matter of just sort of common courtesy, generally you'll let them say what they're going to say, and you just ignore it because it's not material, it's not relevant, it's not evidence, there's no fact to be gleaned from it that you can make a basic decision on. Typically boards don't have the chairman bang the gavel and send the guy out and say, you know, this is expert testimony only, blah, blah, blah. But it's a decision that the board probably should make as a board, and that the chair should sort of, you know, understand and decide how they want to proceed.
That's kind of what we do, is that there's a lot of sometimes emotion in the room, and we will allow that person that has said that they want to testify before the board. Let them say their piece. That way we know there's not going to be any bickering and fighting. They feel we've heard them, even though we're not going to consider any of it. They don't know that per se.
Of course, that runs, could run afoul when you go to a 3-day Board of Adjustment hearing. The Oak Island lasted 2 days. I think it was two 6-hour days.
We're going to change our procedures. did they end up voting on that?
They supported the staff opinion.
And the staff opinion was?
Was to grant the permit.
So they were going to allow the big house?
There's nothing in the ordinance to die.
No, I was just curious.
Yeah,
and I couldn't see whether I was curious.
Yeah. I think the neighbors appealing it to the Superior Court just because they don't want to allow it. Nobody in town actually wants the house that big, but that doesn't mean that they didn't deserve the permit.
And he met all the requirements.
All the requirements.
Parking.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, apparently he met greater than the parking requirement. He had available 23 parking spaces. A big house, lots of room underneath the park. How should hearsay be handled? Again, typically that's done the same as the non-expert testimony. You kind of let them say. But hearsay, on the other hand, if somebody submits a petition or a letter from a traffic engineer even that says this project is going to generate X amount of traffic, even a traffic engineer has to choose, method A versus method B to do a traffic analysis. And if the applicant can't cross-examine, then you probably need to throw that evidence out. And so that's a situation where the person who's not present, their feelings aren't probably going to get so hurt. So you can be a little bit more deliberate about dismissing that evidence.
So the guy presents a Jones engineering firm has done a traffic study and saying X amount of traffic is going to pass through here. And then he presents that as evidence to us at the board. And then, we have no way to cross-reference Jones engineering board.
Well, you can subpoena them.
Yeah, to come at another time.
To come at another time, right. But they should, the applicant, so if it's the appellant's engineer, then it prejudices the town to not have the ability to cross-examine. And so you're compelled to continue until you can get, until the town has the opportunity to ask the engineer, well, what method did you use? Why didn't you use this method? Up in Burgaw, the Hampstead area, the DOT and the citizens opposed to the interchange on the Hampstead bypass had a big back and forth in the press about our DOT traffic forecast versus the opponent's engineer's traffic study. Well, they're different studies, they're different methods. You need to be, if this were a hearing, and somebody's like, well, we use this traffic study method, and we use this traffic study method, you got to be able to ask the guy, why did you choose this, and why is that the most appropriate, method? Is that the most appropriate method because it gives your client the answer they want, or is that the most appropriate method because that's what proper engineering standards say?
So, in a case like that, we would, I guess, you just adjourn it until the guy can come up here. Because we can't cross-examine, so it gives...
If it's material.
If it's material, right.
If your decision would hinge on that being a fact, then you need to hear the evidence.
Okay.
If it's not material, if it is material, but there are five other reasons that are also material, and it's not the linchpin, then you wouldn't necessarily need to. But if your decision is hanging on that information... Then
you have to call.
You really need to get that information.
I was just trying to see how you can throw it out.
Yeah. So time limits are generally not permitted. You probably should put one on me, but not on your those giving testimony. It gets complicated if it's non-expert or if it's hearsay. But if it's not like a regular public hearing where the council can say you've got 3 minutes to say whatever it is you want to say. Because that is sentiment. It's emotion. It's feelings that are being presented. If somebody is presenting the same information over and over again, the chair can say, if you have nothing new to present, I would ask you to step down. But if somebody's basically doing a filibuster and the engineer's in there and the attorney, and they've got a stack of evidence this big and they're going to go through all of it and it's all a little bit different, you got to sit through it. You got to let them present all their facts. Because any piece of it or all of it may be material. And so as long as it's new information, as long as it's relevant information and it's competent information, they have the right to present all of it. So a sample process. So Jim, and this, I end usually with this. So you guys, again, you've done this fairly recently, but it sometimes helps to see what a best process would be, best practice. The chair would open the hearing and announce the case, and obviously you've got your regular parliamentary procedure for opening the meeting itself and, approving an agenda and things of that nature. But when you get to the actual case, the chair would open the hearing, announce the case, the witnesses would be sworn in, the staff would generally give an overview, brief overview of the case. This is the case number blah, 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 so-and-so, is appealing the decision to do such and such, etc. And it's, just general information. Then the appellant or their attorney would present their case, whatever documents and evidence they have, their witnesses, they present the evidence into the record. I don't know how you guys do it. What I used to do is I used to get a sheet of labels and, print them all up, exhibit blank, and they present, here is the... my survey, Exhibit A, sticker, to enter into the record. Here is my building plans, B, sticker, except put it into the record. That way, when you're talking about it later on, you can reference Exhibit A, Exhibit B. The judge has an opportunity to know what everybody's talking about. But, you know, as far as those documents go, that's a good way to record those. Those, they can be copies. So, you know, planning department, building department may have, you know, maybe a copy of plans, the official plans that were submitted in the stay in the project folder. A copy of the plans can go in the appeal folder. But in any case, you know, that's going to be an exhibit. The board can ask questions of the appellant. The chair would allow cross-examination of any of the documents, evidence, or witnesses that were called. Any of the questions that the board asked, they can cross-examine and you know, like you would see on TV. Then the objectors can present their case, their documents, their evidence, their witnesses. That's typically the town, or the, you know, building inspector, zoning inspector. The board asks their questions of them, then turn it over to cross-examination to the other side.
We do it opposite.
You can do it opposite. It doesn't matter which way, but they both have to get their fair share. Then they each can rebut what the other's cross-examination was, if somebody has to make a rebuttal. And then the chair would summarize the evidence. Obviously, that often has to be with the help of either the clerk or the court reporter or the rest of the board members. You would sort of state to and exclude whatever is hearsay and opinion and things that are not going to be basis for decisions. The board can chime in to add or clarify whatever the chairman is summarizing. And then all the parties can offer their objections or corrections or additions to the summary of evidence. So, oh, you forgot about my traffic study, you know, Exhibit C. They could, oh, right, the traffic study showed this, or my survey showed that. Just make sure that all the facts are stated properly. And then the board can deliberate and determine, you know, what in fact are facts and what their conclusions for those facts are. And then generally a motion and a vote and the closure of the hearing. And again, like I've recommended, generally you want to close that hearing last so that if you can change your mind or in deliberations, you've got questions, you have to close the hearing and cut yourself off from getting your answers, your questions answered. Just so you guys don't have an ETJ, do you? What's extraterritorial jurisdiction outside of the city limits? So the ETJ, if you were to have an ETJ, it's not in the municipal limits, but you have planning jurisdiction, zoning jurisdiction in those areas, then there would have to be proportional representation on the Board of Adjustment, but you guys don't have to worry about that. And then also, there are various statutes that authorize appeals of other decisions. And I got to fix that one, too, because building inspector is not right. Other decisions can be appealed to the Board of Adjustment besides... just necessarily the zoning decisions. And that's it.
Looks like we can't tear down Brett and Joe's.
Questions?
Can't do that.
Tear down Brett and Joe's, the historic committee.
Well, we have to talk about it.
Shit,
that's
true. No, I think it's...
So you're going to give us a copy of all that?
Yeah, I'll give it to you.
I definitely would like... one where you had the four items that they had to prove.
Yeah, so generally, your ordinance, like I said, it just references that statute, which is, this is the...
What number is that?
This is the general statute, 168.388. So this is the four pages of state law that regulates boards of adjustment. And your section 19-46 just basically said the Board of Adjustment has the powers in here.
Typically, those four things you had on yours.
Typically, those four things, those four variant standards, those are here.
Oh, okay.
Those are right there. Those are typically in your ordinance. I've not usually seen a zoning ordinance that doesn't include the standards for granting a variance. So, for instance, almost every community needs to update their ordinance because of the new standards. There used to be different standards, the standards weren't uniform. Now this legislature has said these are the four standards and these are the ones you must base a variance decision on. So most everybody has to change their ordinance because they have the standards in the ordinance. It makes it, in some ways it's like a shortcut that's nice, you don't have to change your ordinance every time the General Assembly decides to change statute, but then you guys guys, I for instance, recommend that you become familiar with your Board of Adjustment regulations, but there's almost nothing in your Board of Adjustment regulations. It just references the state law. And that's not a very user-friendly way for...
Oh, so that's state law, you're
right. That's state law.
Okay. Yeah. What is that general statute?
General statute, section 160A-388.
160A-388.
And in fact, in your...
General statute.
In your code of ordinances, section 19-46,
right.
Specifically references that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, my boss. Yeah.
So,
I actually wrote that
generally, those types of things, like what's required for a quorum, what's required for, you know, appeal, what the standards are, you know, about a violation, an appeal staying an enforcement order. All of those things are typically in the ordinance, and you guys don't have any of that in your ordinance. And it's something that you may want to consider modifying your ordinance to be a little more explicit to identify your specific powers. And again, specifically, because 388 gives you the authority to grant special and conditional use permits, and your board hasn't given you that authority. So I think you want to be a little more clear.
Yeah, I'm not. Well, you're good.
We're okay.
But we do need to clarify 1946.
I think so, yeah.
So is that something that you need to bring up, Josie, or is that something that we need to bring up?
You should probably make a motion and let's bring it up to council for approval.
I'll make a motion to bring up 19-46 to be more clarified with the council.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yeah.
No, Peter's much better than me. He's got more of the, he's more elegant than I am, or dignified, I guess would be the right word.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Alan. That was very helpful.
You're very
second.
Welcome.
And I'm going to make a motion to close the meeting.
Second.
Do we need to schedule
the
next meeting?
No, Josie, what meetings are we going to do? We decide to have it.
Two?
Remember.
Two. One in April.
One in the fall, and I don't know if we actually picked.
We didn't pick a date in the fall because everybody was up in the air as to when they were doing what.
Right.
So. Peter, I can get up with us later on.
How do you?
The summer, I am swamped.
You know what's typical for boards of adjustment is to have a recurring meeting time, and then you just don't have a meeting if there's no case. But it's the fourth Thursday of the month.
We do.
And we may have one hearing a year.
Typically, you meet January, just whether there's a hearing or not, so that you elect your officers for the year, approve the minutes from however long ago it's been to sometimes a whole year. And then, you know, if you have a case that year,
we would do all that stuff because we did have to make a report to council of what we did the previous year.
We just keep having the same hearing over and over.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you got to get rid of that groundhog day effect.
Have we, I forgot to ask this during the meeting.